Christopher Media, the Weedsman Podcast.
All right, man. It's time.
It's time. Are we ready for the list?
The list.
So
we all made this list earlier. Just hit around. Maybe got a little too high.
Well, you making know, this list. We did get too high because we only made half the list.
The Weedsman Podcast, every Friday on iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media, let's make some noise.
Hi, I'm Mike White.
And I'm Rob St. Mary.
And we're the hosts of the Projection Booth Podcast.
If you haven't heard of the Projection Booth, that's okay.
But we think it's time that you have.
We've been doing this for over 3 years now.
And we think we're doing a pretty good show.
Every week we look at a different film and put it in context.
We try to bring you interviews with the people behind the films.
Or experts on a subject matter covered in the film.
We don't specialize in any one particular genre or type of film.
We try to examine every aspect of cinema.
From every corner of the globe.
Even at 3 years, we barely just scratched the surface.
But we're ready. We're ready for you to listen to us.
That's right. Now's the time to give us a shot.
Download us through our free smartphone app.
Or through Stitcher, iTunes, Geek Juice Radio, Jackalope.
Or our website.
Projection-booth.com.
We'll keep making great shows.
Now it's your turn to listen to them.
Some people have severely high tolerances.
Right.
And some people have severely high tolerances, and then host their own podcast about it.
Christopher Media, let's make some noise. From Asthma Core Studios near Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, man.
It's the Weedsman Podcast.
I have no idea what's going on.
And now?
You have smoked yourself retarded.
Here are the Weedsmen.
You want to get high?
Yes.
Yeah. Hello again.
Yeah.
Hello.
It's take two for us. Take one for you.
Yeah.
I'm Chris.
Don't ruin the magic, Chris.
I'm Rob.
This is Aaron.
Mike.
Mikey B. Mikey B.
Maybe he doesn't want people to know about the B.
Hey, it's Mikey B.
Everybody should know about the bee.
Yeah.
The bees are really aggressive lately, though. Have you noticed that? Do you guys get outside enough?
There are massive amounts of them surrounding my work.
Everywhere I go, there's a bee in my face getting in my shit. It actually, a coworker got stung on the thumb by one.
Damn.
One that I've kind of felt bad because I tried to kill it and failed.
And it went so after you him.
Rounded up.
Yeah, and he's like, you humans all look the same.
Got your...
I think he was getting revenge for my attempt. But I've killed a number of them, only when they like get in my car. That's one thing you can't tolerate. You can't drive around with a bee in your car.
No.
Bad news.
Like fucking...
But I guess it's good news. Maybe they're just like coming back aggressively, because what were bees on the decline?
In the last few years.
So maybe, I don't know if they still are. Maybe this means one of two things, and I'm just talking out my ass, but maybe it means that the bees are coming back, or maybe it means the remaining bees are super pissed.
It's possible.
We're gonna get you!
Bees! Nice. Bees everywhere!
Love it.
God, they're huge! They're ripping my flesh off!
I'm allergic to bees.
Firearms are useless.
Don't be a hero.
Frank, I'm allergic to bees.
Don't be a hero.
They're huge and they're sting crazy. Save yourself. Your firearms are useless.
I love that.
Figured if we were going to start out with 5 minutes on bees, had to bring it around.
Yep.
Oh, man, I forgot about that part.
Hey, it worked.
So, we got that orange crush.
That orange crush is very delicious. I don't know if it's as delicious as Sheen was, but...
No, I really like that.
That orange, yeah.
I really like it.
It's tasty. Do we got any info on it?
Mid-bong hit.
Great question to ask while I'm taking it. Thank you.
There's editing. And just, you know, I can edit all this
stuff. I said now.
As a matter of fact, I could edit you out of the podcast completely.
That's what usually happens, right? All right. Orange Crush. Or Kush. Orange Kush. Was bred by Green Devil Genetics.
It's probably in parentheses. It's probably also a subname.
Orange Crush or Orange Kush?
Well, I did a search on Orange Crush and then nothing came up. But
wait, I got Orange Crush on Leafly.
Oh, yeah. For some reason mine didn't.
Here, you want to use mine?
I can't read an Apple product. What? Oh, no. It would burn my eyes.
I got,
this
I got
doesn't
it
work
here.
With me. Oh, there it is. Hey, look, my Android app found it. All right. Orange Crush, a savvy... Wow. Savvy. It's savvy. It's salvia. No. Sativa. Sorry. Take three. Orange Crush is a sativa-dominant cannabis strain with super sweet, tangy flavor and aroma. Bred by BC Growers Association with California Orange and Blueberry for parents. Orange Crush produces a powerful cerebral sensation that can close your app. sensation that will last up to 2 hours, and it has a small, dense buds that contain large amounts of trichomes and many orange pistils?
Yeah, pistils.
Wow. Orange Crush has a flowering THC time of 7 to 9 weeks and a THC content up to 15%.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not OG standards, but... Right.
I think that's, you know, pretty much where we've gone.
It's got its own theme song.
Yeah, but yeah. A pistil? But you don't remember... did you learn about... plant reproduction in school, the pistils and the
probably
stamens.
Probably did, but I didn't pay attention. Yeah.
The pistil would be the thing that receives in
so
the female
the
plant,
vagina.
Right? Yeah, it's the plant vagina.
Stamen would be the flower's dick.
I believe that to be correct.
All right, well, we do have a guest today. We should probably get in contact with him. His name is Rob St. Mary.
RSM.
He is a co-host of the Projection Booth podcast, fairly popular movie podcast. Like, apparently, if you are really into movies, if you are a movie geek, this is the podcast for you. I believe the one accolade that sticks out in my mind is he said the AV Club, the Onion AV Club, called it pharmaceutical grade film geekery.
Nice. Ah, nice.
Yeah. So
that's high praise.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah,
I don't think you'll get nerdier than that.
I've listened to it a couple times. It's pretty good.
He's a film director. He's an author. He's a radio host. He's a Renaissance man. There's only one you can't say much about.
He's a unique guy.
We're going to get him on the Skype here because nice. I'm 60 and I put the in front of everything.
Your Skype.
Smoking the weed.
Your Facebook.
Get on the line.
Using the computer.
You're passing the pot.
Using the Twitter.
To Skype.
Hello.
Oh, there it is.
Should I have my camera on? I don't have my camera on.
You can if you want.
There.
We have ours on.
Wait, we got them?
Yeah.
You're going to be that way, huh? I guess I got to turn a fucking light
on. In the darkness.
I'm in the dark.
Brother's darkness.
I'm in my goth stage. Welcome to the pit of eternal darkness.
Nice.
Hey, he's eating a popsicle.
There you go.
Is that juice pop?
Yeah, that's quality stuff, I'll tell you there, sir.
Is that Welch's?
I don't know. Something I picked up at the store.
We have another guest, too. I see to his right.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Which cat is that again? Max is the black one, right?
This is Holly.
Yes.
This is Holly. My old tabby.
Now, Rob is also going to... We just pimped the shit out of the projection booth and all your...
Yep.
Talked about your Onion AV quote, which is pretty cool. He's also going to be doing a movie segment for us here every week.
Called,
Well, what's it called, Rob?
It's called Rewind This and Just Smoke to It.
Nice.
All right, all right.
Nice.
Which, if you listen to the opening I created for it, is a line I stole from a Danny Brown song. So there you go.
We got a theme for this, too?
Oh, I already heard it. He sent it to me yesterday.
Danny
Brown's
a shit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the same open. It opens with the section from the Blood Feast trailer, which is like one of my favorite exploitation trailers of all time. All
right.
So he also lives in Colorado. Which
I'm in Colorado.
Lucky.
The Colorado trip that Chris talks about, that was in part thanks to me. So there you go.
I slept on that couch right behind him.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
I am
partaking with y'all this evening.
Beautiful.
But I'm not smoking, so there you go. I almost had a Moreno Doubt experience, use your term.
Nice.
That's awesome. So what happened?
What did
there?
You experience? What did you experience?
Don't know how to control your edibles.
Well, I picked this up yesterday.
What is that?
Yeah,
this is. I have 10 milligrams watermelon tarts.
Oh.
From the local dispensary.
Those are like the candies that I had out there. That's like.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is the first time I ever messed around with these. There's some local. There was a study that was done in the. Denver Post a few months back about how edibles are really erratic.
That
they haven't really gotten the the lab stuff working right. And some of them that say they had 100 milligrams had not even 1 milligram. Oh. And I think I got one of those not even 1 milligrams like 6 months ago or something like that. And I'm just – I ate like the whole thing and I'm like, it ain't doing nothing, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of like one of those situations where you give the oregano to the kid in high school and you're like, here, smoke this. And dude, I'm so high. It's like, it's oregano, you moron. But anyway, it was kind of one of those deals. I'm like, I can't tell if I'm getting anything off this or not. So what I did was I bought these and I had 2 yesterday and it took about 3 hours to hit me. And by the time it hit me, I was just... And I was trying to act normal in public, so I don't know if
trying to.
I don't know if anyone around me who are my friends know this, because nobody texted me afterward or called me and said or said anything like, you all right? So I guess I'm doing okay. But it was a little uncomfortable because I didn't expect to get that far out. Right. So there you go.
Yeah, it always makes it worse too when you're trying to act normal and you're very conscious of like, I wonder how big my eyes are. What should I do with my hands right now?
Right.
Maybe I should squint a little bit so my eyes aren't so big.
Well, I tell you, too, it's too. I recently, I got my card here in Michigan, and I've been, I like these, the oil. You know, it packs a punch. It lasts a long time. And fucked my one buddy up here. He came to visit me this week, and he's just starting to get into.
Buddy, you mean?
Todd.
Toddzilla.
Yes, Toddzilla.
Toddzilla.
And... yeah, 2 hits off the pen at like 11 o'clock Wednesday morning, like completely destroyed his day.
These, I took 2 of these like at around 6 o'clock. I got home at around 1 and I was still high. So it was like 6 hours off 2 of these little things.
Wow.
I was like, wow. So
yeah,
I'm only on.
Really stick with you.
Yeah, I'm only on 1 right now. So that way I can at least talk and function with you guys. But, yeah. It's just funny. The one thing was I went to this show yesterday and I don't know if I was looking for it or if the being under the influence helped, but I could tell all of the mistakes like really heavily with the band. And it was kind of annoying. I was just like, oh man, I'm like, they're missing cues and like they're trying to trade solos and like the one guy's sleeping. I'm like, and he looks really bored, which led me to say there's really nothing more condemning than a bored Frenchman. And I just want to put that out there. Because
yeah, I know the feeling I think that you're talking about, because when I'm really stoned and I listen to music, I tend to deconstruct it more and listening more to what each individual part is doing rather than just kind of going with the melody.
And I think it may have been that they primed me to look for the mistakes, because it was like a dress rehearsal for today for the band.
Ah.
And they were like, yeah, we're still working this stuff out. Please don't like record it and put it online and things like that. And so... So I think they kind of primed me to like look for mistakes as opposed to just sit there and, you know.
That's
so
odd.
So
all right, Colorado, month 9.
Is it, month 9?
Is there fire raining from the sky yet out there?
Is it raining
or,
in the
I
streets?
Mean, like,
no, it's lovely. You know, sun shines about 300 days a year. Unlike Michigan, where I'm from, where it rains or snows, and then you have 3 days of gray skies. No, it's a lovely place. And you know, I haven't seen plagues of locusts or boils or frogs raining from the sky. So I guess everything's okay.
Nice.
Yeah. So how has the attitude changed? Let's say from January to now. Mm-hmm. How would you say the general attitude is, or at least where you're at. You took me on the high end tour.
Yeah, I'm in the high end area. Yeah, I won't tell you exactly, but I guess it's where the beer flows like wine. Anyway, it's just interesting to watch, because I was talking to a friend of mine who used to be editor at High Times, and she was just like, "Yeah, it's so boring now." She was just sort of talking about pop culture now that it's not all, you know, underground and subversive and everything. And if you want to know sort of like how odd it's gotten now here, in the time that I've been here, just over a year and a half, I've watched a lot of stories come up, but there's been some really strange ones. Like, for example, there was a guy who was a state Senate candidate who had a pot edible fundraiser here.
Wow.
But then again, you know, the thing is, it's getting to a point where people are seeing it like wine, okay? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, I enjoy wine and, you know, that's okay and we can cook with it and things like that. And even the industry here has started a PR campaign that's supposed to crank up in the next few weeks that's supposed to be about getting rid of all these stoner cliches.
Oh, you know? Is that, like, the Consume Responsibly campaign?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was just reading about that from the Marijuana Policy Project is the group that's putting this on.
Mm-hmm. I saw a billboard.
Yeah, so all that's starting. And then where I'm at, like I said, it's sort of the high-end district. There has been some discussion, and we were trying to research to find out exactly who is doing it. But we know that this has happened at private residences. We just don't know if it's going to catch on in the restaurants. Is to do do like a pot meal, you know, with like infused food. Oh, so
like a potluck?
That would be funny if it was in pot infused potluck.
Pretty good. It'd be delicious.
But with these folks, I mean, we're talking like really expensive, like, you know, 5-6 course meals. You spend several hundred dollars to go out to dinner at these places, and they're going to, you know, there's been some discussion that they're going to do that. I don't necessarily know if legally they can do that yet, because there was a conversation that someone I know had with a chef at one of the places, and he said, yeah, we can't really do that, but if people hire us to be caterers at their house, we can do it there. So so there's kind of a gray area right there, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, there's a conference in November that's coming to town that's been dubbed the Food and Wine of Pot, which where I'm at, Food and Wine magazine does 2 big events a year globally. One is in, I think, France, and the other is here. So it's like people showing off their stuff, and here's like the latest things, and it's just, you know, so we'll see. You know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how all this plays out. It's just odd for me because I think that, and sometimes I have to laugh when listening to your show, guys, is because I find things like Leafly and people getting all crazy about, oh, this has this certain taste and all that sommelier kind of stuff that people do with wine. I find it to be absolute nonsense and ridiculous. But that's just me. I just, you know, it's like, oh, yes, I can, so, you know, taste the overtones of this and stuff like that. You know, and people talk about wine. I'm just like, shut up. It's wine.
True. Point taken.
No, but I mean, but at the same time, you could taste the difference, man. I mean,
for sure.
That we were talking, the strain called Charlie Sheen is probably the tastiest strain we have all had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so is there any development? Like, when I came out there, you could buy it, you could take it home, you do, you know, once you left the store, you were free American. But is there any developments on, places to go hang with like-minded individuals and perhaps do this, like a bar?
Yeah, what's it like socially? Because you can't really do it out in public.
Yeah, there's been some talk of that. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I think it'll happen in time, but just not right now. So I think there's a couple of cities. I would want to say Boulder, and Boulder would make sense because it's a college town, that they want to have sort of, you know, hookah bars, hash bars kind of idea. But, you know, I think one of the things that kind of holds it back is that you have to get all these variant laws now, because every place basically in the state is smoke-free. So you can't even smoke cigarettes in the bar, let alone that stuff. So you have to do a dispensation, and it's kind of like when people open like cigar bars, you know. Mm-hmm. They have to get a, you know, waiver and do a bunch of nonsense.
One thing I was wondering, I kind of heard this fact that there's farmer's markets that are kind of popping up where people are selling different strains.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was in California. They had that one, and you guys talked about that. But I haven't seen anything like that here.
Oh, okay.
So the thing is now that's interesting, and Chris can attest to this to a certain extent, is that there's now more pot shops than Starbucks. So congratulations, Colorado.
Yeah, you know, good job.
It'll be like that old Simpsons cartoon where it's like, hey, kid, hurry up and buy something. We're turning it into a Starbucks. It'll be like, hey, kid, hurry up and buy something. We're turning it into a pot dispensary.
Now, has there been any noticeable upswing in any economies anywhere because of this going on? Like, has it pulled any cities out of, you know, dramatic tailspins financially?
Well,
like, you know, like Detroit. If they did that with Detroit here, uh-huh, the financial manager, see ya. We're good. We got a surplus of money now. Like,
I know that Peyton Manning blames an uptick in his in business at his Papa John's for legal marijuana.
Yeah,
he blames them. He blames legal marijuana?
Well, I mean, I guess it's the wrong word to use.
I'm sure he appreciates the business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the word that I'm trying to think of here then?
Credits.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry to be the grammar guy here.
No.
Dramatic out there as far as economies or.
I haven't seen that yet. Actually, there was a story yesterday about how the city of Denver can't quite get its hand on exactly how much is being sold and how much tax to levy. And they say a lot of that has to do with the fact that the business right now, because it is under federal law, legal, has to be all cash. You can't get bank accounts and things like that. Or they're trying to change those rules. And they were saying that because they're not doing the accounting the way a normal business would do, it's hard to tell exactly how much money they should be handing over to the government. So actually, in a way, one government rule seems to be screwing the government in another way.
Come on, Barry. Do the right thing.
Right. I'm surprised PayPal hasn't got involved.
I don't think anyone's going to touch this federally. Most politicians are just saying this should be a states' rights thing if they speak about it at all.
Well, I mean, really, it's kind of twofold. It has to do with when people talk, well, why can't they get bank accounts? Well, technically, they can get bank accounts. The problem is that the bank might not want to deal with it because they can get prosecuted for money laundering. So that's really the issue.
Because they're regulated federally.
Yeah. So that's really the issue. It's not that they can't get a bank account. It's that the bank doesn't want to deal with that.
Weren't there new guidelines released by Congress to the banks?
It's not anything that's convincing enough for the banks to actually handle it. It doesn't give them enough assurances.
Yeah. Instead of saying, okay, we will prosecute you, it's kind of like, well, maybe we'll prosecute you. Which is still enough risk. Right. It's like, you know, they don't want to deal with that.
But there were still a couple places out there that still took cards. Not everybody was cash. There were a couple. You could have just, I handed them my thing. Here you go.
I think what Rob was saying is they might be dealing with it through something like Square or PayPal or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
Kind of change that into cash, basically. It doesn't go directly to a bank.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly, you know, most of the places that I've been around here have all been cash and carry kind of situations.
Yeah, but PayPal would definitely make sense. I mean, because you could use that to do business locally, too, with your suppliers and stuff. If you had customers paying by PayPal, you could easily use that money to pay for your supplies or probably even your rent.
Don't they have, like, a card, too? Like, basically, like, credit card?
Yeah, but that's... That's old school, Rob.
Well,
they do.
There you go. They should just, you know, turn to the, you know, what, like the fried chicken economy, like you were saying, you know, how many buckets of chicken kind of thing?
The fried chicken economy?
Well, you were talking about Peyton Manning getting more sales at his chicken joint.
Oh, no, at the pizza joint.
The pizza Papa joint.
John's. Yeah.
There you go. All right.
At Papa John's. But I'm sure chicken's going up, too.
Yeah. There you go. Stoner stock market. There you go.
Well, also, I heard about this company called Podi Pizza that they make a THC-infused pizza sauce that you can buy. It's $20 for this jar that'll make you enough for one large pizza, and you can eat pizza and get high at the same time.
I already see stoners just buying the jar and eating the sauce.
Dipping breadsticks.
But really, who is that for? That's for like a time-crunch conscientious stoner. Because instead of doing two things, you're going to do it both at the same time, which means you're going to cut the time in half.
But it's not even in the right order, though. Like usually you want to smoke and then you would want to eat. I feel like I would eat it and then get the munchies and then want to eat something else.
Right.
I could totally see the commercials for that. It'd be like getting high, like eating pizza, too much time to do both. There you go. It's like, really?
There's got to be a better way.
There's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
Sick of wasting your time smoking and then eating.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. There's another place that I'll actually deliver, I guess, in California. If you have your medical card, it's called Stoned Oven Gourmet Mandibles, which I thought maybe I'd read that incorrectly. I'm like, what the fuck is a... Like, I know what a mandible is, but...
Your jawbone.
Yeah.
Barbecue jawbones? What do they got over there?
Maybe they meant mandibles.
They're cooking up humans.
I think maybe it was misspelled.
Yeah.
I think it was medibles and the spell correct. Got them.
Nice.
Now, you said, interesting, you said stoner stock markets.
Stoner stock market.
Which is another thing I've been wondering. I've been hearing about, there's a lot of places out there offered going public or initially right away offering penny stocks in their business, and a lot of people have been investing in them. They already made a shitload of money on it.
Yeah.
And this they're betting on expansion, right? Like other states are going to make this legal and they're going to be able to franchise their businesses.
Yeah, I think you got to find McWeed.
Is that the idea here?
Someone's going to turn into McWeed. Someone's going to turn into the Walmart of weed. Well, I liken it to like, it's 1979 right now, and we got to find Apple Computer and invest in
funny.
One shot.
It's funny that you use that term Walmart of weed, because there was a story in the Denver Post probably 6 months ago about a family who has one of the biggest dispensary operations, and that's how they want to be. They actually referred to themselves as such. They said, we would like to be the Walmart of weed. Their idea is just to kind of franchise it and have their hands on all this stuff.
And make their profits on the backs of their employees?
Probably. For sure. You never know.
I don't know. I'm not a Walmart fan, so I'd go with 7-Eleven of weed.
Yeah, there's none near me, so I don't shop there, and I wouldn't anyway. But the thing that's funny is it's just that idea, because I think that there are some who see, well, if it goes federal and then it becomes a big business issue, then there's always this thing about, well, you're going to get, the Philip Morris's and the tobacco companies will come in and take it over. So it'd be interesting to see that if these pioneers who are putting themselves out there right now and putting up with all this stuff indeed won't get scalped on the trail and actually get a chance to have their business and continue to grow once, I think it's probably going to be another 10 years. I mean, 15 years. I mean, look at how medical went to now to this, and see if these mom and pop businesses actually are able to leverage the kind of stuff that they really would like to do, as opposed to handing it over to literally Walmart.
Interesting.
The future.
The future.
Is it great we can edit? We just greeted him with silence.
Yeah, just nothing.
I don't know if that meant it was good or bad. So.
No,
it was
excellent.
It means we're high.
Yeah, we're high. We're smoking some Orange Crush over here.
You used a lot of big words. And all three of us are just,
just in awe.
It's like when Homer's got that hamster running in above his brain.
Yeah.
That's what's going on here.
Well, it's nice to be, beamed satellite into Asthma Attack Studios. So,
I love Rob dressed for us, too, by the way.
Yeah.
He's doing
Usually I wear a wife beater, but not tonight. So I decided to put the Ray Rice shirt away.
I was watching Bill Maher last night, and he shows, and his new rules, he puts up a typical wife beater shirt and says that this shall henceforth be known as a jersey, and then shows a football jersey and says, this will be known as a wife beater.
Nice. There you go.
Hey, thank you for listening, liking, and sharing the Weedsman Podcast on Facebook and following us on Twitter at TheWeedsman420. TheWeedsmanPodcast@ChristopherMedia.net is the email. You can subscribe to the Weedsman Podcast on iTunes for free by clicking through the iTunes banner on ChristopherMedia.net. Android users, you can find the Weedsman Podcast on Stitcher Radio. We got you covered. You can donate to Christopher Media by using the PayPal button on ChristopherMedia.net. Hey, please click through the Amazon banner and bookmark the page. When you buy something, Amazon is going to kick back some money to help keep Christopher Media going. And if you are looking to launch your own website, please click through the HostGator banner at ChristopherMedia.net. That's who we use to host all of the Christopher Media shows, like the Weedsman Podcast. We come out Tuesdays and Fridays. It seems to be working out. Unregimented comes out every Monday and Thursday. Eminem Question Everything comes out on Sundays. And the Toddzil X-Pod, whenever the hell he fucking feels like it. When you sign up for HostGator by clicking through our link, you are helping to support ChristopherMedia.net. DraftKings, it is one day fantasy sports. No being locked into one team for an entire season. You can draft a new team every day. Christopher Media listeners winning real money every day at DraftKings. Please click through the banner at ChristopherMedia.net. Sign up today at DraftKings.com. So the projection booth.
Yes.
Talk about that. How long has that been going on?
It'll be 3.5 I think it's 3.5 years. I've been on there about 2.5. And originally started a guy by the name of Mike White, who's my co-host on the show, or I'm his co-host, I should say. He's been there longer. And he's a film writer. He used to have a zine called Cashiers du Cinemart, and would write about all of these sort of low-budget exploitation and odd films, foreign films, things like that. And decided about 3.5 years ago to get in on the podcasting, as you guys enjoy the podcasting, I know.
Yeah,
and
pretty much.
Love it.
And basically what we do over there, it's a bit different than other podcasts, is and we have friends who do this, and they're great. Like, we have good friends with shows such as Outside the Cinema, which is kind of a morning zoo of film, I call it. And there's another friend of ours that has a good podcast called The Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts. You can kind of figure out what they cover. Yeah. But
the basics.
Merchant Ivory film, you know, those big British epics. But we're a bit different. I think the name implies our ability to go everywhere and anywhere, and that's what we do. We cover, you know, low budget stuff, exploitation stuff, really epic film, cheap stuff, bad stuff, good stuff, the whole thing, even get into 70s adult film, like actual good adult film. And what we do that's also a bit different is we have this really kind of, and we've been called the NPR of film podcast, because we have this really nerdy, obsessive quality to try and talk to, you know, anyone and everyone that we can get our hands on about a relative film. So our episodes can run anywhere from an hour to 4 hours, depending. And usually we'll feature interviews with people who are actors, writers, directors, producers, or people that studied these films and maybe wrote books on them. And so it's basically, you get kind of a breakdown review of the film, what we like, what we saw in it, how it connects to the time it was created, other movies you might want to see, and then usually a good interview. This month, September, like I said, highbrow, right? We're doing all Shakespeare films, but not Shakespeare as you might think. We've done, I think, only 2 standard Shakespeare films this month, but we did Strange Brew. So I know all my friends like us who grew up in Detroit and watched the CBC and those SCTV reruns Bob and Doug McKenzie, eh?
Take off, Hoser.
But most people don't realize it's based on Shakespeare, loosely, Hamlet. Wow. So
really,
so we,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Elsinore Brewery, right? Elsinore in Denmark.
Okay.
And instead of it being, the rest of the plot is this girl, her father is killed by her uncle, and he takes over the brewery. So okay, so the girl's Hamlet, whose father was killed by his uncle, and takes over the crown in Denmark. So it's very loosely based on Hamlet, but it was still pretty fun to talk to. And we had a great interview on there, actually, with Dave Thomas.
Oh, wow.
So awesome. Doug McKenzie. Yeah, so amazing, because I'm just a huge SCTV fan. I'm not on that week. I took a week off, but it's a really cool episode. It's a long one, but if you listen to it in segments, which is nice about what we do as opposed to being pushed into the radio format where everything has to be an hour or – half hour.
You know, interesting fact, the first time I saw that movie was with Rob.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we went to the Magic Bag, and we did Brew and View, and they misread my ID, and I was able to sit there and get hammered. I was like 17.
That was like the only decent movie in the break room at Guitar Center for a couple years. I watched it a lot.
It is a classic. I've seen it a couple times.
So who's been your biggest get, or at least to you, as far as that you've talked to? Like, I can't believe we're talking to this person.
Oh, it's been great. We had William Friedkin, who did The Exorcist. We had him talking about a very overlooked film by him that recently is getting some attention called Sorcerer, which is amazing. We had Peter Bogdanovich. I was excited to talk to him. Really? Actually, I was really excited. Like I said, we had these adult film stars from the 70s. We had Veronica Hardon. We had Sharon Mitchell. They have just amazing stories. Georgina Spelvin, who was Miss Jones in The Devil and Miss Jones, we did an episode on. Just amazing people. It's just amazing stories. There's a big list if you go to projection-booth.com and go to the past episodes and look at the shows. We just have some amazing people. But I would have to say probably the two that were exciting for me. First one is more of a geek kind of thing, is Robert Downey Sr. Yes, okay. Robert Downey Jr. Okay. Yeah. And he's a filmmaker. He basically made underground film in the 60s in New York, and actually worked with his son quite a bit in the 80s and 90s. And of course, gave his son his first role at age 5 in the movie Pound, which is hilarious, the little sound drop that he has in there. He only has like one line. But it was just great to talk to him because I was a big fan of one of his films that he did called Putney Swope, which is, for me, sort of just this great satire. It's about the only black guy on an all-white board of directors of an advertising agency. And when the head of the advertising agency dies in the boardroom, they got to vote on who's going to be the new head of the company. And they all vote for Swope because they didn't want him to feel bad because he's the only black guy there. So he takes over. So he takes over and does everything completely from the opposite end. So he fires everyone. It's all black firm. There's only one token white guy. He makes the most outrageous ads. The president of the United States is played by a midget. It's an amazing film. It's called Putney Swope, and it's hilarious. I think you see like the idea of ad parody and things like that that you'd get in Saturday Night Live a few years later.
And so that was directed by Robert Downey Sr. Yeah. And written by him as well?
Yeah, he wrote it, directed it, and he even dubbed the voice of the lead actor because he didn't like his voice.
No oh, shit.
Yeah, so it's really good. It's quite funny. But the other one that always sticks out in my mind because I was a huge fan of his, and I actually thought that the guy – I told Chris this offline – off the show, that I thought the guy on the couch was a reference to the guy under the seats, but that's probably a generation back from us, which was Chris Elliott on the old Late Night with David Letterman.
Yeah.
He'd be the guy under the seats, and he'd do these little skits. So oh, I was like, when you guys talk about the guy on the couch, you go, what is that, the guy under the seats? I'm like, oh, but we talked to Chris Elliott. We did an episode on Cabin Boy.
Oh, God, I'd love Chris Elliott.
Yeah. And I'll probably review Cabin Boy for my little spot that I'm having on the show with you guys. But Chris Elliott's great. I mean, we had a great interview with him and Adam Resnick, who was the co-writer and directed Cabin Boy.
Yeah.
We get so much cool stuff. I mean, just talking about getting on Letterman and being on Letterman in those early days.
I remember seeing him. First time I saw him on Letterman, yeah. He was eating dog food.
Yeah.
He did the dog food taste test, and he leaves the dogs in the cages, and they just sit there and watch him eat dog food. And he's like, "Wow, the canned stuff's definitely better."
Wow.
Yeah, he used to do this. He would do like these really bad impressions, like Marlon Brando, and but the guy under the seats on Letterman was his thing. He would just pop up and do these skits, and it was always him and Dave like fighting with each other. You know, very contemptful. And I was a huge fan of Get a Life when it was on, and. And to me, Get a Life is like the forerunner of a lot of comedy nowadays because there's a lot of non sequiturs and ridiculousness in there. And like I said, it was just a great, great honor to get to spend an hour with him talking about all that stuff and got some really good stories about Get a Life and of course, Cabin Boy. So that's one that sticks out in my head that I was just like, this is so cool.
Yeah, I didn't even know Get a Life existed until I got Handsome Boy Modeling School, that album by Dan the Automator. They used a ton of samples from an episode of Get a Life.
That's a great album.
It's a great album. All those samples are from an episode of Get a Life where he wants to go and be the...
Yeah.
He wants to be the most handsome model in all the Balkan countries.
It only lasted two seasons. It was 90 and 91, and which means I was 12 when it came on.
I remember it being on.
Yeah, and I remember taping it, and sometimes, especially in Detroit, it seemed to be a show that they would put on at like 1:30 in the morning on a Sunday if they rescheduled it. So it was hard to see all the episodes, but I totally loved Get a Life. I mean, it was just ridiculous and surreal, and I didn't even know what surreal was when I was 12.
Right.
I mean, I look at it and I see things like Mr. Show, and I really love Mr. Show as well.
Yeah.
So.
No, I can definitely see the correlation.
Yeah.
SpongeBob SquarePants was on Mr. Show.
Really?
That's right.
Tom Kenny.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mr. Show. Yeah, and that's the thing.
Paul F. Tompkins is on there, too. I love him.
Yeah. Well, all the Breaking Bad fans would be like, you know, Saul, you know, Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah.
So.
Can't wait for that spinoff show, too. Yeah. They're doing that. Call Saul.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. Those four seasons of Mr. Show are just hilarious. I mean, it's probably like the best sketch comedy since Monty Python.
I've watched them over and over again.
Yeah,
I think I've watched them more than Kids in the Hall, which is something that I've watched repeatedly. But since there's only four seasons, just like, well, just go and watch them again. It's all still funny. The one big, my favorite episode, the big joke about the guy, this traveling salesman who comes to the farm, and he, you know, your classic joke of, you know, trying to fuck the farmer's daughter.
Yeah.
And then it goes into this whole musical.
Yeah, it was the milking machine joke. It runs through the whole thing. Like, it's so brilliantly written. And it's like, there's no fat in those shows either. There's no, like, dead time. It's just
Jack Black plays the devil in that one.
Yeah. My favorite one in there is Globochem, which almost reminds me of Putney Swope, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
Because it's about ads and advertising and corporations, and it's like each ad gets specifically worse. So
we have like more and more, no shit.
More and more swearing. Yeah. So like the first one's like one swear word, the next one's like 20, and then the final one is just all swear words. Just
fuck. Shit. It like backs out, the camera backs, pans back.
But I love that opening where the two guys are talking to the head of the company, and he's like, you know, people don't think your company cares and all this. And he goes, listen, he goes, our company was in the people business when you were still in short pants. My great 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 grandfather started this business with one rickety old leaky slave ship and a simple motto. People selling people to people. So don't you tell me I'm fat. Just a total non sequitur. But just the I love that. With one reeky, you know, handcrafted leaky slave ship and a simple motto.
So, can we talk about what you got coming up? Can we not do that yet? Or
what?
Your book, man.
Rob wrote a book.
Sure. I don't know if you wanted to talk about that or not.
Yeah.
No, man.
Well, you're all Detroiters. You guys are all Detroiters, but but I had to laugh at the last podcast where you're listing off all these suburbs, and I think it was Aaron says, I hope the folks in Peoria or whatever, and you're enjoying this, you know. But, I don't think it's that bad. I don't think talking about the book is that bad. I mean, it is Detroit-centric to a certain extent, but it is a little more global.
Yeah, but Detroit's getting a lot of attention globally, even for just being a shithole.
Well, it's more to it than that.
No, I'm saying that's the only reason that they pay attention to it. It's like, this place is crumbling.
Well, Detroiting has become a verb or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is I tell people, and I go, and this is not like, I have huge amounts of civic pride. I mean, I do. I was from there. My family's lived in Michigan for over 150 years and things like that. But I mean, if you sit down and you look at culture of just global culture and specifically American culture over the last 100 years, I say that Detroit's the most important city in the last 100 years. Now, some people will argue New York, some people argue LA, and I will tell them, go open the door and look out in your driveway. Go look out on the street, out the window of your office.
Yeah.
That thing right there, all things good, bad, and different about it, that's us. That has changed your life more than any other thing, you know, that you would have had. You probably would have lived and died within 5 miles of your little village if it wasn't for the fact that you had the car. So let's just start with that. But when you talk about culture, and I'm not even going to get into all the other stuff, but let's just look at music. And you guys are a bunch of music guys. You know, if you want to go from John Lee Hooker to Motown to Aretha Franklin to her father, who is in gospel, C.L. Franklin, Parliament Funkadelic, Iggy and the Stooges, MC5, Ted Nugent, Bob Seger, let's see, Techno, The Gorries, Dirt Bombs, Jack White, White Stripes, Eminem, ICP, Kid Rock. You either Parliament Funkadelic, I may have said already.
Alice Cooper?
Alice Cooper. You know, these people, you either like them, love them, listen to them, or you like the stuff that they influenced. There's no escaping.
Right. Yeah, because a lot of the artists that you named there were very influential artists that were at the forefront of these burgeoning genres of funk and techno and, well, even rap is still relatively young.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I tell people, I go, Detroit is the most important city culturally of the last 100 years. And it may be the most important city of the last 100 years if you want to toss in the arsenal of democracy on top of it. The winning of World War II and the ability to have those tanks, planes, and everything that was needed to fight that war. So
yeah, you could definitely argue that we would not have the same success without Detroit.
No. So that's what I tell people. I go, this is not civic boosterism, because Lord knows I've got enough problems with the place. But it is just truth. You look at it, you look at the influence it had, the impact it had. It's the most important city in the last 100 years. So getting to the book. The book is specifically on three magazines. The title right now is called Reentry, the Orbit Magazine Anthology, which is based after the last and longest running magazine of three. And I say that it encapsulates about 35 plus years of Detroit cultural history, starting in the Detroit punk rock scene in 1978, all based around Bookies Club 870, which was at 870 McNichols, just west of Woodward. Okay. In Palmer Park. And in that scene was a magazine that was created that was in line with something like LA Slash or New York's Punk Magazine. It covered the local scene plus those national acts that came to town and sort of the attitude and what was going on. In 1986, the guys who created White Noise, which only lasted for six issues over 2 years, created what, from my research, I've been able to find is the first free humor paper in America. It predates The Onion by 2 years.
Yeah.
And that was called Fun Magazine. And Fun Magazine basically was a bunch of people in a room who were in the rock scene in Detroit and just wanted to make each other laugh. So there was a lot of attitude in there that I would say was like the old National Lampoon of the 70s, Mad Magazine, Underground Comics, things like that. They did write about music and film and stuff like that. But it wasn't as actionable as sort of like your usual alt weekly. So then in 1990, they put Fun away and sort of morphed it a bit and came out with Orbit. And Orbit's what I remember. I started reading it in 94 when I was in high school.
Yeah, me too. Around the same time.
Yep. And what I really loved about Orbit was it took all of the usual stuff that you got in an alt weekly, and it pulled out the politics, it put in humor, and it was all arts, culture, and things like that. So they would cover music, they would cover film, food, all that stuff, but it was always done with a real sort of tone. You know, it had like an attitude. It didn't take itself seriously.
Yeah, it was kind of snarky.
Yeah, which was really nice. And then they would do like deliberate humor features. Probably the most notorious is How to Be a Better Stalker. You know, like I think they did one on how to kill yourself properly, Guide to Suicide, things like that. So that kind of stuff reminds me of what people love about Vice nowadays.
Right.
And this predates Vice by like 6 years. So it's that kind of attitude. And they would do, you know, they would do interviews with people, or they would write about the band. Like my favorite ones are always, and people still talk about them, are they would do, you know, the usual calendar that you would get in alt weeklies, where it's like, okay, Friday, you know, band's playing, whatever. And they would do these write-ups where a lot of times they weren't even talking about the band. Or if they were highlighting the band, they would even tell you not to go see the band, which is kind of counter because it's like, why don't you highlight something else? But it was always really funny and ridiculous. Like, I remember one, it was about someone I think just wrote about how their relationship sucks and they're fighting with their boyfriend or something. And it's like, oh, yeah, and by the way, like, Hole's playing at St. Andrew's Hall. You know?
That sounds like a reasonable segue, though.
Yeah. So
shitty relationships and Courtney Love. I can see it.
There were always just great stuff in there. And I got on the project 3.5 years ago because I knew someone who knew the guy who is the publisher of all three of them. And he's known around Detroit as Jerry Vile.
Yeah.
And Jerry made a splash last summer with what's called the Crisco Fist, which BuzzFeed called one of its top 15 or whatever street art pieces of the year. And what the Crisco Fist was, he created this sort of like Warhol-esque, you know, if you're talking soup cans or Brillo boxes, Warhol-esque giant can of Crisco and put it underneath the Joe Louis fist.
Nice.
So, I missed that.
So that was last July. Oh, it was July of 13. And it got all over the place. It got shared. I remember I loved the comments, and I think it was Fox 2's Facebook page, where some people were like, I don't get it.
that's right, you don't.
Yeah, and then there were other people that like, oh, that's rude but funny. And really what it was in reference to was with going into the bankruptcy. Detroit was just going into bankruptcy at the time.
Yeah.
And then about 3 weeks later, he did a follow-up, which was he took an ad out in the Metro Times that was like a going out of business merchant, you know, liquidation sale ad. And but it was for the city of Detroit. So it had all this like slick advertising stuff, and it's like now parking meters $9.95, or you know, he had the old Mr. Allen's thing, you know, 29 or 2 for $50.
Yeah.
So you put like, you know, get this like 29 or 2 for $50 and things like that. So he took he had that ad, and at the same time in the morning when the ad came out, he had a whole crew of people like putting for sale tags, you know, like price tags on the Fist and on the fountain on Belle Isle and the statues downtown and things like that.
And they kept trying to put up the collection of the DIA up as assets for their the agreement for their bankruptcy.
Yeah. Ludicrous. Yeah. See, which led Jerry to do a follow up this summer, which isn't in the book. I didn't write about this one, where he took a whole bunch of pink flamingos, the lawn flamingos, and he painted them up like vultures. And then he put them on the lawn of the DIA with a sign that said, you know, about art vultures, you know, warning, you know, kind of thing. Nice. Just a little FU to the bankruptcy. So a lot of his stuff has mutated into street art. I mean, he had always been an artist. And Jerry was in this punk band in 78 and throughout the 80s called the Boners. And the Boners were known originally more for their stage show than they were known for the music. They had good musicians, but the songs were ridiculous. And basically people would go see the Boners because Jerry would do crazy things. Like, for example, he did this one where they did this like on stage kind of skit on the Honeymooners called the Honey Boners. Like it was like a half play, half, you know, band playing. He had one where all the band was dressed in those really bad 70s tuxedos, and he came out from under a bride's dress, this woman who was announcing him, and he had like, you know, tampons all over his face and stuff like this, and then proceeded in that song to strip himself naked basically down to a leather G-strap. He did things like the Flying Nun is probably the most iconic, and there's a photo of that that'll be in the book, where he had his friends get a really heavy cable and string them up from the ceiling, and he dressed like the Flying Nun, the old Sally Field TV show, and sang, you know, the show basically from the rafters in this Flying Nun outfit. So, you know, he's always been about that, and then right as Orbit died in 99, he started the Dirty Show. And the Dirty Show actually coming up in February this year will be around 15 years. And
yeah, I've attended a couple of those.
And they're big fun. I mean, they're not only big fun, but they have really great artists. I mean, it's an international erotic art exhibition each February in Detroit, which is a great time to have it because you can tie in with Valentine's Day and also the fact that it's cold as hell and people don't want to go out. Yeah. So they can go here and they have like – Jerry has like burlesque performers and things like that. And then you can buy the art, which, you know, some is sculpture and some is paintings, and it's people from all over the world to send their stuff in. He's had people like H.R. Giger, who recently died, Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo, Clive Barker. I'm trying to think of some other famous artists, but really just an amazing, you know, array of people that have come through there in 15 years.
And so, a great attitude there too. Like, not creepy at all. Actually, less creepy than your average Comic-Con.
Which is funny because I was talking to Jerry had this thing with Orbit, which I didn't realize as a kid, as a reader, was he didn't do what most magazines seem to do, especially cheap free magazines like Orbit was he didn't like taking band promo shots and putting them on the cover. He just saw that as lazy, or promo shots for a film or something. So everything was an art cover. Like either he had somebody go out and shoot a model, or had an idea or design, and he had artists who were in Detroit and some nationally now respected and internationally respected artists do art covers for each magazine. So he's always been about that art. And when I was talking to one of them, who he goes, Dirty Show's like a guaranteed sale. He goes, it's great. He's like, people come, they look at the stuff. And he goes, they always seem to want to buy. But the thing he said was funny is, he goes, now he's like, Jerry's audience is like women in their 50s from Birmingham who like come to this thing.
Really?
You know? Yeah. It's just like I mean, sure, you get the people that are into the S&M scene and, you know, they come all pierced and tattooed.
You're telling me it's Cougar Town over there?
But yeah, it just seems like, you know, he's getting all these, you know, old middle-aged folks from, you know, moneyed suburbs that want to come look at, you know, fake dicks on the wall, I guess. I don't know. So it's good.
It always gets back to Boners.
But it's been great getting to know him, and I tell people, that, for my money, Jerry's probably the most important figure in Detroit's art and cultural underground, I would say, in the last 30 years, because of all the people that came through the magazine that he championed and his staff's championed, and the opportunities that he gave people to, like I said, do covers, to write, to go on and learn how to be a journalist and go off and do stuff. And, you know, there's, it's just funny. It's just funny to go through these old magazines because I have the whole archive, and you watch in the first year with Orbit, you see a 19-year-old rapper from Romeo that has really, like, you know, bad hair by today's standards, I guess.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the run in 99, Devil Without a Cause is just coming out. So yeah. You see this evolution of Kid Rock over 9 years from the rapper to the rocker that he would eventually, you know, be more known as for those who are uninitiated to, you know, yodeling in the valley as a 12-year-old.
And now he's a country artist.
Yeah. And then you see the same thing with ICP. You know, ICP wasn't getting any attention from the mainstream at the time. And they're in Orbit in the early years when they're first starting out. You see early write-ups on White Stripes and Dirt Bombs. And they said the Gorries, Techno. There's all that stuff. And then when you go back to the first magazine, to the Detroit punk scene, I mean, you have not only write-ups on some of the nationals that came through. Like,
this is Fun magazine, right?
No, this is White Noise. This is 78 to 80.
Oh, okay.
So if you go back to that, I mean, you get stuff, write-ups on the Ramones, on Devo coming through, the Dead Boys, because there was this big connection with Detroit and Cleveland at the time. So bookies would have people like the Dead Boys come through and Para Ubu and all these Cleveland bands. The Cramps, Devo, I mean, they were from Ohio.
Yeah.
So you get all that in there, and then you get Patti Smith and that. Then the one thing that I think is really cool about the Detroit punk scene, and I think is really overlooked, is, you know, people go, okay, L.A., New York, and London were the real big scenes around basically three different bars, if you look at it. I don't think Detroit's punk scene really gets much respect because it didn't have a band that broke, unlike 10 years before.
What about the Stooges?
But that's 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Grandy scene matters because there were so many bands that either got signed, got attention during that era, or would get attention later. For example, like Bob Seger and Ted Nugent were in there, but they weren't huge until like 6 or 7 years later,
right,
in the mid-70s. But the Detroit punk scene from basically, I've been able to kind of write it as 78 to 82. The only band to come out of there that got any attention and they really, really wouldn't be considered punk was the Romantics.
Right.
And so I think that a lot of people forget that the scene even existed because there was no band that broke out of that scene. So, but you had a lot of really interesting...
Yeah, but a lot of people didn't know about the Stooges and the MC5 that set the pace for all these bands that were breaking at the time.
Oh, yeah. So, but as for that scene from 78 to basically 82, the one thing I find interesting, speaking of the Stooges and the MC5, was they were the architects of the sound.
Yeah.
And you had one band in that scene that had members of both. So could you just imagine being like, you were into punk, you like the Ramones and stuff like that, and that stuff's getting attention. Well, here's the guys who actually like created it, and they're in your scene. As opposed to when you read stuff like, when you read Punk Magazine out of New York, they're always on about Iggy and the Stooges and all that stuff. Well, just imagine if like members of that band were playing in your scene, and just kind of how cool that is to have that. So, so Destroy All Monsters had Ron Ashton, who was the guitar player for the Stooges on the first two albums, and Michael Davis, who was in the MC5, who's a bass player. But you had a lot of really great bands, and like I said, the Boners were interesting and fun. Cinecide, which is still around Detroit, they're really good. You look at their early stuff.
That's a Detroit band? I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, Cinecide, C-I-N-E-C-Y-D-E. Yep, Cinecide. And I worked with Jim and Gary, and sadly, another aside about them, the store that they worked in for the past 40 years, and they consider the first video store in America, Thomas Video, just closed.
Oh, yeah.
For you Detroiters, such a cultural loss.
Yeah, that was right up there with losing Record Time for me.
Yeah.
You know?
So there were just a lot of great bands. I mean, there were a lot of great bands in that scene, and they just don't get any attention because, like I said, their records didn't hit big. They weren't getting radio play locally or nationally, and I just think it's really overlooked, but there's a lot of really great stories in there.
All right. Thanks for listening. That's the end of this episode. Tune in next week and you'll hear part two of our fascinating interview with Rob St. Mary and talk some more about weed this time, actually, instead of just about Detroit. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. See you next week and stay high.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.